Episode 4 of the Torque Factor podcast is here, and I'm your host, Scott Brown. This is a place where we discuss all things moving the automotive service industry forward, focusing on expanding knowledge and awareness around tools, equipment, education, and industry trends. Today's featured guest is Dirk Fuchs with ZF Group, who will discuss vehicle electrification, training, and certification. And we'll hear from Jeff Del Rosa from ProMax Tools, where he discusses the science and solutions to successfully repairing broken fasteners. And we'll also have a NASDAQ update from Donnie Seifer and Holly Wolf from the Vision 2020 High Tech Training and Expo. This episode is sponsored in part by VehicleServicePros.com and Gray Manufacturing. Please consider thanking them for helping us bring this show to life. Gray Manufacturing's position as a market leader of professional shop and lifting equipment comes from the innovation and quality we demand from our American-made products. We're still open, and our vertically integrated manufacturing is here to support your team as you support the trucking industry during this critical time. Call us at 800-821-7320 or visit grayusa.com today. VehicleServicePros.com is a trusted online resource for vehicle service and repair information, fleet maintenance management, and the latest products for servicing America's fleet of vehicles. It is the official website of Professional Tool and Equipment News, Fleet Maintenance, and Professional Distributor Magazines. VehicleServicePros.com is on the pulse of the industry, sharing new technology, the latest product information, and market trends to keep our readers in the know-how. That brings us to our recall segment. NHTSA recall 19-Victor-761 involves just under 653,000 General Motors truck platform vehicles. These are the 2014 to 2018 Silverado and Sierra 1500s, 2015 to 2020 Tahoe Yukon, and 2015 to 2020 Suburban. All of these vehicles are four-wheel drive. They have the 5.3-liter L83 engine with the 308 GU4 rear axle. When these vehicles are traveling at speeds above 41 miles an hour up to 60 miles an hour, and if they have a failed wheel speed sensor, the electronic braking control module will apply the brakes on the opposite side of the vehicle, causing a severe pull. GM is recalling these vehicles and will reprogram the electronic braking control module at no charge. A recommended best practice is to always run VIN numbers through the NHTSA website on vehicles passing through your service facility so that you can ensure that these folks get their recalls taken care of. And this episode's case study, once again, comes from Diagnostic Network. I came across this interesting one about a 2001 Lexus that Robert Chabot from Murray Motive Auto Repair and Tires in Oldsmar, Florida. Basically, the car came to them after another shop gave up on it, and the car was actually running poorly, misfiring, and it also had accelerator pedal position DTCs that were set. So he began analyzing the vehicle, and I can tell that he's a fairly advanced technician because he went and connected his scope and a current probe to monitor the coil primaries. And he came across two coils that did not appear to be correct. So if you're looking at the YouTube version of this, you'll see the video. He's looking at the primary current here for coil number one. That appears to be looking fine. It goes to coil number two, and that one does not look quite right. And the same with number three. So he began doing some investigating and found that he had to take a throttle body off to get to the coils. And he discovered that somebody had been in there before making wiring repairs, and they basically inadvertently reversed the polarity on the ignition coils, causing this problem. He writes to report that he did look at the APP and all those inputs looked fine, and that after he repaired the wiring properly and got everything working, the APP code did not set again. So the reason for bringing this case study up is because this is something that you may run into. This is stuff that happens on cars that are a little older. They've got quite a few miles on them, and they may have had some repairs done that may have induced a failure like this. And I would venture to say that using the regular diagnostic processes that the service information provides may not have led him down this path, and maybe would have had him changing APP sensors and whatnot. So anyhow, the entire threaded discussion link is in the show notes, and I would encourage you to click through and check into that, because you can definitely learn a lot. That brings us to our featured guest, Dirk Fuchs, who's a technical training manager at ZF Aftermarket. Dirk and I got together at the 2019 Bimmers Conference in San Diego, California, where we discussed vehicle electrification, certification, OEMs, and what ZF is offering here in the States. So let's have a listen. Dirk, you've recently, or ZF has recently started a certification program mm-hmm. for electrified vehicles. So can you tell me about that?
Yeah. It's super exciting on the first. What we're doing on the ZF side is that we mainly educating first of our own work, our own engineers, our own technicians who working on those high voltage technology within certificate, what we're calling high voltage expert. This high voltage expert is an education after the European standard. There is an regulation in place, what is called ECE R100. And this regulation regulates what kind of educational background you have to work on high voltage systems. That means nobody in Europe or in Germany is allowed to work on those systems when he has not attended at this educational program. This educational program is a 12-day training class with an exam on the end, where you have to prove your tech, your practical as well as your theoretical knowledge. We from the CF side, we can reduce that, and we putting e-learnings up front. That means we can reduce the face-to-face training to 7 days. And now you see, this is like for the US, let's say we focus on the independent aftermarket, pretty tough to get 7 days technicians participating in face-to-face trainings. And currently here in the United States as well is no regulation in place. That means right now it's here the Wild West. You can do whatever the hell you want to do. And I'm a big promoter for those educational programs, and I would like to see a regulation, and I want that we protecting technicians.
That is interesting. So let me just recap here. So in Europe, your regular program is a 12-day program, all right? And then you're accelerating it here by doing a prerequisite of taking some e-learning.
The regulation says we need 12 training days. Okay, we can reduce that, and we have 9 different e-learnings in place, and each e-learning has an exam on the end. And the European regulation allows us to say, okay, you have those e-learning in place, we check them, they are great, and they educate your participants. We can reduce the face-to-face part to 7 days. This is how we got a little bit around that. For example, we are here with Bimmers and BMW. BMW is doing the full 12 days here in the US, as well as in Germany and other countries in the world. And BMW, for example, says, okay, we're following our European roots, and we're following that rule. And
this is for the BMW dealership, though.
Dealership. Okay. Engineers, everybody who comes in touch with high voltage technology.
Mm-hmm. And so, for say I'm an independent BMW shop and I want to get this certification, how can I do that?
I will offer for the next year a couple of classes. I didn't schedule them yet. I will do that in the next weeks. And then you can find those on our webpage. We have a CF /US/trainings webpage where you can find all my scheduling and stuff.
So this is all brand new.
That's all. Right? That's all brand new. Yeah.
You talked a little bit about the requirements in Europe, and of course here in the States there are no requirements. There are no certifications or required licensing to work on a high voltage vehicle. What is the requirement there? They have to go through this training. They have to take a proficiency exam to get a license. And what is that license? You're doing the license, but what is it called? The high voltage license mechanic?
It's then called high voltage expert.
High voltage expert. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. And I know that you had also mentioned that recently you, through association work, you recently went to Washington, D.C. and talked to some folks in authority and talked about this licensing for high voltage. What can you share there?
Oh, yeah, that was one of my most exciting adventures here in the United States. I'm as a German going to Capitol Hill and educating and speaking to Congress people, representatives and senators. And super exciting. And there were a couple of interesting stories what I could share. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll save that for another conversation. It's maybe sometimes exciting and sometimes frustrating,
right?
To deal with these folks that don't quite understand exactly what we're dealing or what we're trying to prevent from happening.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
This is dangerous stuff. It could definitely be lethal, right? And we certainly don't want technicians getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And the more that we see these electrified vehicles, especially in areas like California we're in today, have a very high population compared to other regions of the U.S.
Scott, let me dive in a little bit on that point. And you introduced me and you said I'm a training guy. And you know, in my training classes, and I did a lot already on hybrid technology, but I touched base a little bit more on the lower level. But my feedback was, of course, a lot like that folks say, I'm not want to deal with that stuff. I don't want to learn about it. I don't want to touch that. This is not, I'm doing my regular maintenance stuff. And that's what I hear a lot. And it's critical. And I will tell you a story what will happen. And maybe that's open our audience a little bit more towards, hey, I have to learn stuff about that. One of our customers, a large German manufacturer, gets from us a lot of hybrid and electrical components. And one of those hybrid vehicles went to an oil change chain here in the United States. And sounds nothing crazy, then the combustion engine needs an oil change. Okay. Vehicle gets on the lift. It's a nice car, luxury car. Music is on. Then there is a really nice Bose system in. The shop let the Bose system run and they drained the oil. Ignition on this vehicle was on.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Okay. The sounds everything, nothing special. Okay. Oil got drained. They're figuring out, we don't have this oil filter on stock. We have to order it. The vehicle stands on this lift for I don't know how many hours, running music, they have fun in the shop, but the battery got drained. And in this case, the 12-volt battery gets drained. The owner of this vehicle drove to this shop fully electric on his hybrid, on his battery power. Okay, now you have to understand how an hybrid vehicle works. It means when the 12-volt system gets low, it gets recharged by the high-voltage battery over an DC-DC converter. The high-voltage battery gets drained. Now the car starts, we're running here out of juice. How are we getting? How we can recharge? We can start the engine. Ignition is on. And that's where we're happening. And the vehicle was out of oil. I hear it from other manufacturers as well already that there is a problem. And what you have to know as a technician, you can say, okay, I don't touch this high voltage side. Totally fine. And you have to be educated before. But you have to know how the whole total system works that you don't make this mistake. For example, I can name Toyota. When you have a Prius and all those Prius or most of those Prius have start button.
Smart keys.
Smart key. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They require when you do something on this vehicle and you make an oil change, you have to put the key somewhere far away that the vehicle is not communicating with this key. And this is a similar situation. And yeah.
Yeah. A simple operation like changing oil.
Yeah.
And these guys, of course, that is, I mean, playing the music, that's like a no-no. If it was happening in my shop, that would be a no-no. But they just didn't have that understanding that, mm-hmm. hey, there's a motor generator attached to this engine, right? Mm-hmm. There's two of them. And so, you know, when the ICE or the main battery goes down, the 12-volt battery goes down, they're going to fire the ICE up to mm-hmm. generate some current for the big volt yep. battery to bring it back up. So, yeah, you can imagine what happened with no oil mm-hmm. in it. This shop is quickly went backwards. Well, I hope that was a good lesson for them. It wasn't a pretty lesson, but hopefully they shaped up and said, hey, mm-hmm. this will never happen again. You know, we all make mistakes, but if that happened in my shop, that would have been a total protocol mm-hmm. change, and it would have been a wake-up call.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So nobody got hurt, but, you know, now the customer's vehicle had mm-hmm. to go through all of that trauma of having an engine replaced. And you know, these cars, once they go mm-hmm. together once, you typically don't want to take them apart. But that's a pretty sad case. But, thanks for sharing that. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let me also say a couple of words about... You asked me already about a little bit difference between Germany and the U.S. Educational system. That was the driver education where we were talking about. Let's speak a little bit about the technician's education, what is different. And what I think it has to be said and it has to change here in the United States. In the U.S., in my experience, the best classes, what you can see is where you can go, or what I see is when this class is problem solution based. Okay, when somebody puts up a class and says, oh, let's take this vehicle, and in this vehicle we have that problem, and that's the solution. I see the full room full of students, and they're writing and say, okay, that problem, that solution, that problem, that solution. The educational part here is strongly problem solution based. It's not bad, you know, and, you know, fix a lot of problems really, really quick and saves a lot of money. Totally understand. Another part is there are a lot of technicians here working with experience. It's great as well. But when you learn with experience, you learn over your mistakes. You made a mistake like what I described, and then you learn about it, and you never will do it again. Now we come to a subject: what is high voltage technology? Those batteries are right now 360, 400 volt batteries, and there is no room for mistakes. There is no room to learn with experience. Then experience is a mistake. You make one mistake and we're not talking anymore. And here we have to change our way how we train people. Not solution and problem based anymore. We have to give the technicians out there first the basic foundations of the technology, how it works. We have to train knowledge based. You know, when I'm going and disconnect the vehicle, they show you in the dashboard high voltage system disconnect. You pull the service disconnect and you go in your car and you see disconnect. And you think, okay, system is disconnect. Let's go open an orange cable. Yeah, there are capacitors in this whole system. These capacitors are still charged. And you have to measure before you touch anything that this vehicle has really zero potential. And that's the most important thing. Then also a charge of a capacitor can kill you. And that's a lot of things. And it comes also in place that we're using completely new measurement tools, two-pole voltmeters, for example. What a regular electrician on your house at home will use. Now we're using those equipment in a regular vehicle. And measuring insulation resistance, measuring potential equalization for what is that stuff, how it works and stuff like that. And that's a big base of this training, what we train. And
I do like what you're saying there, because I've seen they call it silver bullet training, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't teach anybody how to think. Now, the technician or the instructor could be sharing his thought process or how he maybe caught the problem or what have you, that's good to know. But I think what you're getting at is that, one, they need to have some foundational knowledge of how these systems operate. Know that when you're doing something, why am I here? Did I do what I need to do to make sure that I'm safe? But three, when they run into a situation where they're trying to troubleshoot a problem, they need to work like an investigator, right? Mm-hmm. They need to have all of those critical thinking or analytical skills to say, you know, you look at what the service manual may prescribe, but there may be cases where the problem is intermittent or it's misbehaving, you know, intermittently. And so you need to look for some indicators, or you need to test or validate certain things rather than just going to a book or a forum or online and seeing that there's the five solutions for something similar to this and throwing parts at it. Mm-hmm. That is not the right way to do it. So we are professionals in this industry, and I think that the further that you push your education and knowledge, the more successful you're going to be in the end run.
Right.
Yeah, great. So thank you, Dirk, for providing us with some insight, and I hope to have you back on. I know I'll have you back on in the near future, okay?
Okay, of course.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
If you've ever had a broken exhaust manifold bolt to deal with in the car, you'll likely be interested in this next segment. ProMax Tools develops and builds high-quality template kits that are designed to bring machine shop accuracy to the vehicle. Now meet the CEO and founder of ProMax, Jeff Del Rosa.
Thanks so much, Scott. Good to be with you today.
All right. So, Jeff, you are the founder of the company. Are you the chief executive officer? Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I founded it back in 2010, Scott, and we've been growing ever since. A lot of testing initially, but I designed the tools, founded a company, designed the tools, understand what the situations are, and we develop solutions for all those challenging repairs out there.
Okay, so why don't you just tell me a little bit about where this manifested from back in 2010? What was the drive?
Yeah, the impetus was simple. Growing up in a family dealership, since my dad was in the Ford business since 1952, and I started out as a technician way, way long ago, and ended up working on many, many diesel trucks, tractors, and throughout my career, working for my father through my believe it or not, elementary, junior high, and high school years, even when I was out of college during the summer, I was working with my dad as a technician or running parts or running a shop or other things like that, running the business. And it was very helpful because I got a great perspective of the business, the automotive business, obviously mechanical. I went on to go to get my degree in engineering technology. I always wanted to be an inventor because I saw a lot of opportunities in overhauling transmissions and overhauling engines in my dad's dealership. And I understand what the problems that technicians face today. I see it firsthand every day, and I still travel. I still go out to see customers, go out to sites. That's primarily where our R&D comes from. It's very beneficial because I can talk to real technicians solving real problems and understand the pain that they're into to try to develop solutions for the problems they're running into. But it really started because, I had a Ford Explorer. And it happened to my own Ford Explorer with a V8. It was an Eddie Bauer, and it started ticking, much like we know that happens today when it's a diagnosis of this problem, exhaust manifold repair. And it was happening to my own vehicle. So I took it into a local shop, and they told me what it was. So I thought it was a lifter. And long story short, I took it to my dad's business in upstate New York. And my brother actually had determined what it was, and we had a fix for it. That's where the original Rocky tool came from. It was my brother Rocky who made the first one, and he made it with a cutting torch and a piece of steel. It was quite raw looking, and it was quite large. And when he fixed my truck, my Explorer, we took a look at it and he said, hey, you know, this is kind of something that's kind of cool. Let's see what we can do with it. And as an engineer, I decided to re-engineer it and design it so not only would it be more effective, quicker, but also producible. In fact, it would be economical to make. So that's how it all started in my own car.
Okay. Well, cool. That just so we can get our listeners up to speed here. So what ProMax does, and what's the web address? ProMaxTool.com with two X's?
Yeah. Yes, correct.
Okay. So, you know, as one that has been involved with auto repair for the last 37 years or so, I've had my share of broken bolts and off of the exhaust manifold, broken bolts into the cylinder head. I've had to come behind folks that have tried to do a repair and end up botching it up. And it's a timely job. And when I first started looking at your product, I'm going, oh my gosh, this thing is marvelous because it sets up a nice template and it pretty much eliminates those missteps that are taken with guys that are trying to do some handheld stuff or trying to, you know, drive a drill bit through a center bolt. So tell me, what are the top hot button, issues that you're seeing today? You know, what powertrains are you seeing bigger issues with in the marketplace?
Great questions, Scott. And let me touch on what you said earlier about the template. The premise was to bring machine shop accuracy and application right to the vehicle. I mean, not everybody can take a cylinder head off and send it to or wants to take a cylinder head off and send it to a machine shop and stand in a queue waiting for that to be repaired. And frankly, this is a repair that is has become most cases unprofitable for the shop and a big, large hassle, like you just pointed out, for the technician. So a lot of times shops defer this. So bring a machine shop application or technology right to the vehicle was the first, which drove this. But the hot buttons today are just what you said. Number one is the accuracy of machining. Starting to open up the market back in 2010, as we did, the biggest thing is trying to bring accuracy to the job that they're trying to do and to complete in a timely factor. Before we came into market, the repair times would average between 2 to 3 hours a stud. On a V10 engine, a Ford 6.8, it could run as much as 2 days. And today, we've narrowed that down to the job can be done within just a few minutes of each stud. So it's much, much faster. But the hot buttons are the level of degree of difficulties. How can we simplify it? Even having a jig and having a machine shop application that we have now to the vehicle, what are the other things that are driving this? Accuracy is obviously very important, which we deliver the same type of accuracy you can get in a machine shop. The tooling involved is very important. You know, some of these engines, and particularly in the pickup trucks, 250, 350s, your Silverado, your cabin chassis vehicles, your diesel, all these engines are designed to work, right? And many of them today are turbocharged. So what does that all do? It elevates engine temperature, cylinder head temperature, exhaust manifold temperature. So one of the hot buttons is simply put, the temperatures are so much hotter that the prevalence of this expansion and contraction of the manifolds, the gray cast iron, is happening at a faster rate today than they were in the past. So that's really what's driving it.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I love that statement about bringing the machine shop accuracy to the field, right? So this is field service, and which is kind of a rougher environment, right? It's in the vehicle, and being able to line up that template and make it work. But more importantly, for those that, you know, are in the business running a shop, and if you look at the business metrics driving the shop environment, you know, that bay is a revenue generator, and it should be generating labor, and it should be generating parts revenue, right? So if you're working on a bolt for 2 hours or 4 hours or 2 days, that's a huge negative. So if this product can help to mitigate those challenges, then hey, that's an awesome thing. So a little bit about the name. So the first name, the Rocky Tool, that was your brother's name. So you have a number of tools I've seen listed on your website that carry a number of different names, but I wasn't sure what the heck that actually meant. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, interesting approach. It caught on, Scott. Once I named Rocky, I couldn't stop with just one brother, and I have 9 brothers and sisters. So being from an Italian family, a traditional Italian family, obviously we had a big family. So caught on, and we started naming after our brothers and sisters. Well, you know, I only had 9, So I ran out of them. So I named the next couple after my son and my daughter. And then we ran out of that runway. So we started naming after my nephews and nieces. So that's how it caught on. And I had quite a few of them out there being from a big family. So I think I got at least a few more names yet tools to be named yet. And we still have names in the hopper. So awesome. We're good there.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So when somebody buys one of these, a toolkit, say for an application that they're working on, is there any offer for any type of technical support, via phone?
Yes. In fact, we have unlimited technical support and it's always free because we know that even though that you have some master techs, some senior techs, and even technicians have been doing this particular job a long time, it's every one of them are new. You know, it would be nice if it's predictable, but it's not. You know, we've narrowed that field when they utilize our products that we've given that repair a predictability in terms of time. That's something's changed. Prior to that, every one of them were different because based on where this stud breaks off, you know, it's one of the causes. A lot of people think that the causes for this repair is as a result of unlike materials, aluminum cylinder heads, a cast iron manifold. And although that has a small contribution, only from the contribution that they expand at different rates, that's the only reason. But truly what happens is in the old days, Scott, the manifolds used to be temp conditioned before they were sent to the machine shop. They would come out of the foundry, it would be conditioned, the cast iron would be conditioned, and that would be sent to the machine shop. Well, the seasoning and conditioning took place prior to the final manufacturing. Well, today they come out of the foundry, they go right to the machine shop, and the seasoning, the conditioning of the product, the manifold, that is, happens on the vehicle. So you have this warping and twisting and what we call plastic and elastic deformation. That's an engineering term, but I'll narrow that down. Elastic deformation defined by that amount of change dimensionally, then it returns to its original state, right? And that'll do that. So when our customers in our shops and our dealerships go ahead and service these trucks or drive these cars, what's happening is heat and cold duty cycles, you're in an elastic deformation curve with the technology or with the materials in the exhaust manifold. After so many duty cycles of hot and cold, it becomes plastic. That means it goes into a certain point of deformation and it will not return to its original state. At that point, it's broken stuff.
So that is interesting. I love when I can hear the science being applied because that is really what we really need to pay attention to, right? And what you just talked about, the elastic deformation, I don't think a lot of techs really think about that, but the fact of the matter is that's what's driving it. The other thing that I've noticed is that, you know, I've done a lot of engine performance stuff. And being in the hot rod capital of the world here in Southern California, we've seen a lot of new powertrains go into vehicles. And I've seen what goes on inside of the engine controller.
Yeah.
And these late model cars are running in, they're running in a closed loop mode, even under power. So, it's in boost mode, in the old days, you would typically go into power enrichment mode, which would add a lot more fuel and actually cool that exhaust charge. And that is not happening because of emissions and for fuel economy, which, who takes the biggest hit on that? The exhaust manifold. And so with all that expansion and contraction and all that elastic deformation, that's what's driving it. So as far as, I'm sure that you guys probably have tips and tricks on revised fasteners, so when these guys go back together with these vehicles, they're delivering a better engineered application than what they started with. Is that correct?
That's correct. In fact, we always recommend the OEM manifolds, Scott, because they are most of them are robust. More the cast iron is thicker across the cross section. The dimensions are more stable. The mounting areas are reinforced and they're stressed. They're engineered to be stress relieved. So they will take a longer period of time during elasticity mode to return than some of the offshore manufactured cast iron manifolds. The other thing I want to touch on real quickly is we talked about a second ago about what's causing it, the elastic and plastic deformation in terms of the engineering terms. But one of the other challenges that come into is if you ever tried to drill a bolt, I mean, it's easy to drill a bolt that's flat. or a surface flat. But there's no control when these bolts break off. As you can appreciate, you can think about what's going on dynamically. So let's envision this in your mind for a second. You're thinking about this manifold under an incredible tension of tensioning that 8-millimeter bolt. And it's pulling, it's pulling, it's pulling. So what it's trying to do is trying to unthread it or unwind it. So first thing it's trying to do is twist it because it's pulling at it. The second thing it's going to try to do is when it's under extreme tension, when it's warping, is it's pulling on that stud perpendicularly to the head, and it stretches it. And then the whole assembly is being stretched. It's not the manifold, although that's an elastic deformation. The bolt itself is being stretched. It comes back almost like a rubber band. Well, when it breaks off, obviously it breaks off uncontrollably. And typically what happens, it's not unusual when they break, is that the driver will hit a mud puddle or be in the rain or something flashes up on top of the manifold and it hits it with cool water and it shocks it. That's usually when it breaks. When it does that, the breakage happens at not an acute angle, but various angles. So you can imagine not a flat surface to drill against, but a slight angle. And jagged, right? Because it's resulted in a breakage under tension. So one of the things that we design as part of just a plate, or the pro plate we call them, is a template. Does it bring that machine application to the vehicle is important, but doesn't stop just there. All of our tooling is machine grade. It's not stuff that you buy over the counter. And what the difference is, machine grade tooling is more accurate. It's designed for longevity. It's designed to be more precise in terms of the dimensional characteristics, i.e. the ID, the OD, the cutting angle, the relief angle, how straight they are, all these things factor. But the big thing is all of our drills, tooling is center point tooling, not split point tooling. And what's the difference between those two? For those of you that know, split point tooling is good for general applications. But when you're using a machine shop application, a center point does two things. It establishes a center right away. And number two, it stays on center. It doesn't drift or walk is a common term. So even though our tooling is a little bit more expensive than over-the-counter stuff, it's designed that way to cut true, clean, accurate holes. And also when you have the angularity of the stud, Scott, it allows you to get on center. Even though there's an angle, it allows you to get on center and not drift down that angle and walk down, causing an off-center drill bit, their off-center drilling application take place. That's a big deal.
Yeah, that is a big deal. And one that has some high school buddies that I stay in touch with frequently. These guys are machinists, and they're building some pretty elaborate stuff. I can truly appreciate quality of tolerances and preciseness. It's amazing. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and the second thing that happens, so let's go back to the dynamic. So we got this dynamic motion of the manifold shrinking, cooling, expanding, et cetera. It stretches, it relieves, stretches, relieves, hot and cold. All of a sudden, it decides, I'm done. I'm going to go ahead and stretch beyond, and I'm going to break that stud off once and for all. So what happens is the stud is being pulled, it's starting to be twisted, and then it snaps in the center first, and then it opens it up and unwinds the threads and violently snaps the threads and it releases. And of course, somewhere down the highway, that little piece of remnant of what has the hex bolt on it or nut falls off and rolls on the highway somewhere. So what's left is the remnant. Now you got this nice remnant that's broke off, but it's also exposing hot air gases, which are, by the way, as you know, haven't been sent through the catalytic converter. So you have a high rich concentration of chemicals going through that exhaust system. So the ECM is doing its duty to start to allocate, adjust fuel and air mixtures to be able to compensate for now we have a leak that's going out of the exhaust manifold versus going through the exhaust system, right? So but what happened at that dynamic point where the bolt broke off is that thread broke and that nice hard steel stud drove a nice little wedge or burr, as we call it, right in that soft aluminum head. So that's locked itself in. And secondarily, what's happening is you've got that fresh aluminum being exposed to those chemicals that are unburned. That accelerates the corrosion. So gentlemen that are looking at this, look up into that bolt that's broken off, and he sees a lot of fungus. He or she sees that fungus growing, that corrosion. Then he sees a bolt that's almost encapsulated by that corrosion. Lots of problems. And then beneath all that, you have this nice burr that's dug itself in. We understood that problem, and that was a challenge. So we came out with what we call a pro cutter. Once you, the operation is you drill the hole dead center, perfectly perpendicular, you remove the device, the jig, or the pleat, and then you use our pro cutter, which is designed, it's got an aggressive four-blade cutter that runs the peripheral. It's got a small arbor that sticks proud of that cutter to allow you to go into the hole you just drilled with just a thousandth of an inch clearance. We machine that as well. And then in 5 quick seconds, by pulsing the drill on and off, it removes the corrosion, it removes the burr on the stud, and it flattens that stud perpendicular to head. Now you've got what would seem insurmountable task of removing that. Now it's doable because it's cleaned and we removed anything that would prohibit removing the stud in the first place.
I love that because preparation can save you in the end. So I really appreciate the fact that you guys have really studied this thoroughly. Just from what you described there, I'm really impressed and want to learn more about the products and services. So again, where do folks go to find out more information on your tool, or where can they buy these tools?
Obviously, promaxtool.com, they can find us. Many of our dealers are out there. They also, authorized dealers represent Promax. Our online website, as we just said, and they could call us at 724-941-0941 to get more information about any of our products and coaching. We also offer, we have a lot of DIYs out there that want to do, they're quite mechanical. They want to do the repair themselves, and we do offer some rentals. We have some refurbished products that we've taken in, remachined, and certified that they're as accurate as brand new. So we have a lot of different options for any budget that any particular technician or DIY guy is going to be involved in fixing one. So just as a call, let's put something together. The other thing nice about our kit, Scott, is it's, even though it's engine specific, what we did is we built in uniformity and consistency in all of our accessories. So therefore, one plate for one engine, but all the accessories in our kits are adaptable for any engine application. So you have one plate for one engine, all the accessories are adaptable, so they don't have to really buy one plate. So our kits can be adapted to any engine application without spending a lot of money on buying repetitive kits. Just buy one kit, one plate, and grow as you need the needs to change as your repair shop encumbers those types of repairs. And we keep growing them. We have the largest inventory, the largest portfolio of exhaust manifold repair kits in the market, and we continue to innovate more. We even have an adaptive one that's adjustable. So if you have different applications that we may not have a specific engine application for, we have one that's adjustable that it can mirror duplicate the exhaust pattern or bolt pattern of any cylinder head in Class 8 diesels and classic engines like your old 350 Chevrolets, your 460 Fords, 429s, etc. It can replicate some of the and even in a V6. Quite innovative, and that's available for our customers as well.
Wow. Well, I greatly appreciate your time today, and thank you for sharing all that information about the ProMax tool. And I'm sure a lot of guys can appreciate the engineering efforts that have gone into this to try to mitigate this, you know, a bad event where you've got an issue. So, again, guys, I really appreciate your time today, and looking forward to seeing you in the future.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. Thanks for having us.
At the 2020 Vision High Tech Training and Expo, I caught up with Holly Wolf and Donnie Cipher to get an update on what's happening with NASDAQ. So let's have a listen.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
All right, we've got Donnie Cipher with NASDAQ. We've got Holly Wolf.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Welcome. So Holly's kind of new, and if you're on any of the committee team calls, you hear her pretty voice. Well, here she is.
Oh, well, thank you.
She's here to help us. So Donnie, what's new with NASDAQ?
Well, we've been really busy working on the new NASDAQ website. As you know, because you've been around since the beginning, NASDAQ's 20th anniversary is this year. So we're also releasing a website this year that will make it so that all the information that you're looking for is organized more by brand and less by operation. And we think it'll be a lot easier to navigate. And our ultimate goal is to have the information chasing the technician instead of the technician chasing the information. We're going to take a couple of years to get there, but just this will be such a massive improvement that I think you'll be really impressed.
Cool. And so Holly's bringing a lot of assistance, you know, reducing some of your bandwidth, because you're doing a remarkable job. You've been doing a remarkable job for the last couple of years, and it's amazing. So what's your impression so far with working with NASDAQ and the members?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, but I've just been impressed by the quality of the engagement that we get, because honestly, NASDAQ lives and dies by how engaged our membership is, because it's all volunteer, and we don't take any money. NASDAQ is free to join. And these are the people who are really telling us what's going on in the industry, what we need to be worried about, and also providing the solutions. So it's our job just to bring those people together and get the information out there. And it's just really amazing everything that we have been able to do and are looking to do moving forward. But it's all just based on the people who help us out.
Great, thanks. So, Donnie, any recent developments? I know we had this, we've got a lot of web services issues with these OEMs. So give us a breakdown on what's going on there.
Well, the entire OE automaker piece of this is evolving. They've had security issues. They've had to change payment platforms. We've got all these new privacy rules. And they've all been wrangling those at one time. So that has resulted in multiple automakers' websites going down, things not working the way they're supposed to. We just got done working through exactly what Holly's talking about. FCA, which is Fiat Chrysler, for those that don't know, FCA had a problem with the time it would take when you would log into Tech Authority before you actually had access to it. You had to receive a token. Well, it was taking, in some cases, 4 or 5 hours. And if you're a mobile diagnostician on site, that's a little inconvenient. It just can't work. And so what we did was we got lots of service information requests, and we went through those. I digested them into one piece, sent it over to the FCA guys and said, here's the use case. Well, they didn't really have that use case. They didn't understand it completely. There was a lot of people sharing subscriptions, and that's what they were trying to protect. But what they didn't understand was how the mobile guys connected and what they used and all that. So we got that information to them, and then two of our NASDAQ members, they assisted by being at vehicles and testing with them. And so they got an IT guy at FCA and their service information manager. Everybody worked together, and from what we're hearing here at the show, we've got almost instantaneous response times. In fact, I had one guy respond to me and say, the worst I've seen all week was 20 minutes now. I can live with that. I'll just get it before I start.
Well, that's great. So that's an example of industry working with NASDAQ and through the OEMs and kind of giving them the real story, right? So
well,
they have visibility.
Yeah. The automakers have said repeatedly, in fact, my contact at FCA says, we're not trying to make it hard. We're just trying to protect our intellectual property and make it so that the technicians can do their job. We want them to be able to do their job, because if they can't fix our cars, no one's going to buy our cars.
So if you're a technician listening, you need to stay up to date with the technology and service information and really what's happening in our complex space. Where do they go for more info?
Well, go to nasdaq.org. It's up here behind Scott. The old site's still running. Holly and I just did a bunch of updates on it to keep it plugging along as long as we can. But if you do have a legitimate problem, you've tried all the sources that are available for information, file a service information request. There's a little button on our website. You will get a response back from the system. You will not be able to see it on our website because it takes just too long for me to get them to work. It's broken. It also has suffered from web services that have gone way beyond its capabilities. We've got something new and sexy coming on that pretty soon. But for right now, I handle every single one of those personally. They all get done, and they get done fast. Occasionally we'll run into one where there's a legitimate, we just don't have that, and so they have to figure it out. But by and large, most of them get right on them, and we've got solutions within a day.
All right. Well, thank you guys for your time. Nice seeing you.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. Thanks, Donnie.
Now, this is a segment that we normally talk about upcoming industry events. And just prior to the release of this episode, the world changed with COVID-19. For myself, March 2020 was to be a very busy month. And although the Vision High-Tech Training and Expo was a success, many other events have now been postponed or canceled. And as a husband, father, and shop owner with extended families, I want everyone to be safe and healthy. I would also like to announce that P10 Magazine and Diagnostic Network recently partnered up to launch the Disaster Support User Group on Diagnostic Network. For more information, look to the show notes.
Hello, Newman.
And we'd love to field some of your questions, so please consider emailing us, podcasts@vehicleservicepros.com.
Now that brings us to the end of the show, and we hope we're able to bring you some quality content and look forward to future episodes. And we're looking for your feedback, so if you have any questions or comments, please drop them in the mailbag. And please hit the subscribe button to receive notifications on future episodes. Thanks for joining us.